What's going on, everybody, and welcome back to the Deep Drive in the Left Field podcast. My name is Jack. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Halloween Nerds. I'm here with my co-host, James. You can find him on Twitter at James Valentinas. And Ryan, you can find him on Twitter at Ryan your CESM. In today's podcast, we're going to be going over our right field rankings. So we'll do our top 10. Again, the way we do this is a cumulative ranking. So we have our top 10 that we kind of compiled between the three of us. You know, then we'll each talk about each position and you know, where we ranked our guys. So I think we just get started with number 10. Number 10, we have Corbin Carroll of the Arizona Diamondbacks. He had a bit of a look last year. He looked great. He's going to be great this year. Again, Carroll top 10 might even be a little conservative. The defense is going to be really good. The base range is going to be really good. Obviously, the power is not, like, up there with the top prospects, but he still does have quite a bit of power. He's a great player, great all-around player. He's a guy, you know, that I would not be surprised to see in our top 25 players at the end of the year. Like, that's how good this guy is. I'd be surprised personally a little bit, but I wouldn't be that surprised. Like, it's not out of the realm of possibilities by any means. He's a really good player. Diamondbacks locked him up for a long time. He'll be there for a long time. I personally had Carroll 10 as well, so this lines up. Ryan, where'd you have Carroll on your list, and how do you feel about his outlook for 2023?
Yeah, so Corbin Carroll is someone that, as you mentioned, you know, it feels like he's one of these guys on this list that are going to have kind of the most upward mobility. I think as we kind of go through this list and talk about different guys, I think our viewers at home will kind of be able to pick up who's going to move up and who's going to move down this list most likely. I had him at 7. I was really high on him. I think he's a really good right fielder. And as you mentioned, you know, all the tools, defense, base running are going to be elite. So, you know, you kind of have a high floor player there, even though it's at a position that isn't that defensively valuable. And the bat, right? The bat is really good. I think we're looking at a guy, who's going to give you good offense year to year, even if it's just a 115 to 120 WRC plus. I still think he's kind of a shoe-in to be a four war player. And I like the base running, the on base skills. I like the ability to make contact at least a league average rate. And at least in terms of raw power, yes, you're right, he's not like overly impressive, but in terms of game power at the minor league level and a little bit at the major league level, he's been able to excel. So I imagine that we're going to continue to see that. And he's a fast guy playing in, you know, Arizona. That's a pretty good place for triples. I think we're looking at a guy who's going to lead the league in triples and probably give you a 4 to 5 more year.
And James.
Yeah, I mean, there's not really that much to say about Carroll. It's a little interesting. Like, I know people are going to complain that he's, you know, played 32 MLB games, whatever. He played well when he played last year, and he's the number, what, 2 prospect in the entire league for a reason, right? He does everything well. He's young. They signed an 8-year, $111 million deal, which basically just takes out all of his team control anyways, plus I think 1 year, right? It's normally 7, now it's 8. So not a huge, like it sounds like a lot more than it is.
Would be 6, plus there's 2 team options, I believe.
At the end, there's would they like, would they like $35 million team options?
Well, can at least get up to 134, I believe. And because this year start would be 6 because he started last year. So it would be basically you're buying out 2 extra years of arbitration right now. And if the team option gets exercised, it would be 3. I'm pretty sure that's correct. So okay. It's actually good.
Yeah, so it's a club option and 31. So only 1 club option, $28 million.
Yeah, but there you go. It's still 9 years technically, assuming Carroll plays the way he does, and he's definitely going to be pick that up. So,
right. Yeah, I mean, elite speed, elite defense, and a great bat. Like, there's not really much else you can ask for. I think he probably should profile as a center fielder, you would assume, right? With 80 grade speed, but I think he's going to play right this year. I'm not fully sure what the Diamondbacks plan is.
Yeah, he's gonna play. He's gonna play one of the corners.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't really have much else to say.
All right, let's move to number 9. Here we have New York Mets right fielder Starling Marte. Marte was really good last year. Mets signed him as a free agent, 4 years, $64 million. I like to pick up at the time, and playing right field makes his value probably better because he's not very good in center field. Pretty solid in right field, I believe. He's very fast. His age is getting up there though, so you're hoping he doesn't lose any of that speed. He's got some in-game power similar to Carroll. Good bat-to-ball skills. He's just a good player overall. I personally also had it at 9, so it works out here. I agree with the list. So, yeah, he's a good player. Again, he's not like a – I feel like his floor isn't – his ceiling isn't as high as a guy like Carroll or some of the guys on this list, but he's definitely going to be very solid. Base running is also fantastic, obviously, as well. You know, I already mentioned his speed, but he's also a very good base runner. Ryan, how do you feel about Marte for 2023?
Yeah, so Starling Marte, you know, kind of, you know, after coming into 2022, there was a lot of talk about him regressing potentially offensively from his 2021 season, and he actually improved on his 2021 WRC plus mark. Is that me sitting here and saying he's going to be a true talent 130 WRC plus guy? No, but I do think projections are really conservative on him. They have his BABIP dropping from 340 to 312 if you're looking at Steamer, 308 if you're looking at Zips, and yet he's still a 115 and 116 WRC plus hitter in both projection systems. He was able to put up a 3-WAR year last year under 120 games, despite the fact that he had negative BSR, which I don't see holding up. I think we're going to see a little bit of positive regression there. I think in terms of just offensive value, I think we're going to see a similar Starling Marte, because when you combine the base running and then the base running getting better, of course, and the bat taking a step back, I think that'll kind of combine to give you similar value. And then, as you mentioned, you know, he's a much better defensive right fielder than he is a defensive center fielder at this point. I know outs above average didn't like him, but DRS did. You know, whether that will continue to hold up over time, we'll have to wait and see. But, you know, he's at least not an awful defender at the position. I think he can hold his own. I know he's getting up there in age. He's going to enter his age 34 season. But quite frankly, I think that we still are going to see another really good year of Starling Marte.
And James.
Yeah, I agree with Ryan. I know a lot of people think, like, you know, just because of his age that there's going to be, like, some regression there, especially since he's so reliant on his, like, base running as – you know, like an outlet for his value. But at the same time, last year he was, you know, massive negative defender, which is a little confusing given everything else, you know, he's done in his career. 3-WAR season last year, I have him, I think a few spots higher. I'm at number 7. But I trust the bat. And I think that we'll see, like Ryan said, a pretty big increase in, or at least a bounce back in his BSR, because negative BSR is not who Starling Marte is.
All right, number 8, we have Lars Nootbaar of the St. Louis Cardinals. Nootbaar has played really well for Team Japan so far. He's a guy that a lot of people have breaking out this offseason or this season. He frankly has already kind of broken out in my eyes. I think he'll be a little better this year, but I don't think he's going to be an MVP candidate. He's really good, though, on all accounts. He's a really good defender, runs the base as well, hits the ball incredibly hard, has really good makes really good swing decisions. Sorry. He's a really good player all around. He'll be playing right field for the Cardinals. You know, they trade Harrison Bader to the Yankees, so Carlson slides over to center. You know, I think it'll be interesting to see what they do with Carlson when Walker's ready to go, because he's kind of like the odd man out at this point. But right now, you know, Lars Nootbaar is going to be the right fielder for the Cardinals every day. Bat speed, one of the fastest bat speeds in the league. That helps a lot with exit velocities and whatnot, and it reflects pretty well considering he hits the ball really hard. I had Nootbaar a spot ahead. I had him at 7, but I think it's pretty reasonable. Ryan, your thoughts?
Yeah, I had Lars Nootbaar as my number 8 right fielder, and quite frankly, you know, he's a really good player. I talked about this with Carol with you know, upward mobility on this list, and I view Lars Nootbaar as one of those guys as well. You know, 2022, as you mentioned, was a huge year for Nootbaar. 125 WRC plus, hitting the ball hard, great swing decisions, really good defender, really good base runner, is going to be able to play you all three outfield spots really well. So that should help the Cardinals. As you mentioned, there's Carlson, Jordan Walker's probably going to be involved in there, Alec Burleson, Tyler O'Neill. There's so many outfielders there that he's going to probably have to move around as guys get hurt, as the Cardinals kind of, you know, trying to figure things out in their outfield alignment. But man, Lars Nootbaar, I really think we could be looking at a player who's one of the premier position players in all of baseball. You know, I'm saying I don't think he's going to like win an MVP this year or anything like that, but I do think he's going to finish top 20 in F-WAR. If I had to say like one of the better outcomes for him, not necessarily like his ceiling, but what would be an ideal outcome? I think that's certainly in the cards. I'm really high on Lars Nootbaar going into next year. I just couldn't put him above certain guys ahead of him.
All right. And James.
Yeah, I mean, Nootbaar's been playing great recently for Japan. I think last year had a great year, right? 125 WRC plus, 2.7 F4. I don't know about top 20. I think that's probably a lot, like a pretty big stretch there. I don't know. I think I'm a little lower on him than like the general consensus or you guys for sure. I have him at 10. You guys have him at 7 and 8. I mean, not like a huge difference. I just don't. I don't know. He kind of came out of nowhere last year, right? He was a 35 FE prospect. But he had a great year last year. 125 WRC plus, like I said. You know, he can hit. The average is really low. But you know, he's another one of those guys. And I feel like we said this a lot when we were going over the outfielders and especially and middle infielders, where they're just like, they're good hitters, they're good runners, and they're good defenders, but they're not like great at anything. And I think that Nubar is one of those guys who can kind of bring a lot for you, but nothing, you know, like nothing special.
All right. All right. At number seven, we have Chicago Cubs right fielder, Seiya Suzuki. Suzuki came over in Japan last year. He was a little hurt, but he played pretty well when he played. I would expect definitely a leap this year, though. I personally had him at number eight, a spot below Nubar. Nothing crazy, though. Again, both are pretty reasonable. You know, he's pretty solid all around. The defense is okay. The offense is kind of where you're going to get you make your money. Obviously, right field defensive value is not that important. I mean, it's important, but it's not crazy important. So you can kind of live with lackluster, not lackluster, but like not elite defense out there. Like if the strength's about, obviously, it's really fine. Projections like him. Projections liked him a lot last year. He was a little bit – he started really hot, obviously. Then he kind of cooled off a bit with some injuries. So I would expect Suzuki to definitely carry some more of that pre-injury play into this season. I think it makes sense considering he won't be playing hurt. Ryan, your thoughts on Suzuki for 2023?
Yeah, so I had Suzuki and Nubar flipped. I had Suzuki ahead of Nubar. Now, after this oblique issue, now that take is probably not going to age very gracefully. But I will say, with Seiya Suzuki, and I feel like this can also be used to apply for some of the other rankings on this list, we're looking a lot at ceiling here. You know, Seiya Suzuki has, you know, star-level ceiling. As you mentioned, you know, he hits the ball really hard. He's pretty fast. He has a really good arm. So I don't think it's completely out of the question for him to figure out the kind of, I don't think it's a range issue. I think it's kind of a jumps issue, whatever it may be. I know he got better defensively in the MPB as he moved to the corner outfield. Maybe it's just, you know, trying to figure out Wrigley Field. I have no idea, but I think there's some defensive ceiling there for him still. And then as you mentioned with the bat, you know, hits the ball hard, projections love him, which I know is going to come off as me just saying he's only going to be good because of projections. But looking at some of the swing decisions, looking at the fact he didn't strike out too much, which is usually an issue for people coming over from the MPB. And then, of course, the quality of contact was excellent. I think that there's that chance that he goes out there and rest assured after some, you know, time on the IL, probably he comes back and he puts up an all-star level season and guides this Cubs team to kind of that first year with this core together.
And James.
Yeah. I mean, I like Suzuki a lot, obviously. You know, I'm a Cubs fan, so there's that, but like, I don't know. I think a lot of people are way higher on him than I am. I think like Ryan said, like you think he has like star potential. I'm not sure if he does. But obviously like it's tough to know off of just one, you know, major league season where he kind of like struggled with injuries and whatnot. But then again, he's already struggling with injuries this year. He's not going to start the season on the major league roster. He'll be on the IL, which I don't think is a huge deal, but you know, it could turn into something major. It's, I think it was a groin injury and those are never, you know, never one you want to play around with. He's projected 127 WRC plus. I think it's probably pretty reasonable, maybe a little bit high. Zips has 135, which I think is really high. But you know, this Cubs team will be better. He won't have to, you know, be hitting third or fourth every game. But I think, yeah, I think this is a good spot for him. I had him at eight. He's at seven here. Not like too big of a difference.
All right. At number six, we have Toronto Blue Jays right fielder. Probably going to be doing some DHing or more DHing this year as well, but going to be playing some right field. George Springer. Springer is a guy that I feel like he was underrated for a while, then he got a little overrated last year. And I think we're kind of getting to that properly rated point. He's a really good hitter. The defense is not what it used to be. The base running isn't exactly what it used to be as well. I'm sorry, his speed in general. You know, he's kind of declined as an athlete considering his age. He's also very, I would consider Springer to be an injury prone kind of player. Again, I don't like to throw that word around, but I think Springer is definitely in that category. Really good player though. Definitely, I would say kind of that gap. I would say you have your bottom four left right fielders in the top 10 at least, and you have Springer, and then you have the top five that are in a different tier. But Springer's slightly better than the other guys. I feel like we listed before him. He's a really, like I said, really good player. You kind of know what you're gonna get with him. At least a 125 WRC plus kind of bat, at least probably gonna cap around 140, but he's gonna be a really good productive hitter. So, Ryan, what do you got on Springer going for 2023?
Yeah, so George Springer, another one of those guys who, you know, he's kind of always been a really good baseball player. Now, obviously, the injuries were a concern and are a concern, but I think that they don't have, now that they don't have to play him in center field much, if not at all, they can kind of, you know, manage his days on the field a little bit more. We could see a significantly, you know, more durable George Springer, even if that means sacrificing a lot of the defensive value that he may have had. Because even a league average or slightly below league average center fielder defensively is going to give you more value than, you know, average defense in right field. So yes, he's not a base. I mean, last year he did have a 4.6 BSR, which was the best of his, which is the second best mark of his career. He did steal 14 bags, but, you know, bigger bases, maybe he can get the green light up a little bit more. He played 132 games last year, put up a 4.2 WAR. It's like he's coming off of a year where, you know, it's not like a Rendon situation or anything like that. But if we can see more health, I don't think, I know I've said this multiple times for multiple players, but I don't think like MVP votes are too like much to ask of a George Springer season if things go right with health.
And James.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you that I don't know about MVP votes, but I think, you know, between the two of you, you kind of say everything I'm thinking. I think with Springer, like, we're looking at a guy who's, I don't know if I would cap to WRC plus 140. I think he's still capable of the 150, like close to 160 that he's done before. It's just a matter of whether he's on the field or not. He only played 78 games in 2021 and 133. It's not bad last year. If he can play 133 again, he'll probably have another four-win season pretty easily. Like you said, I definitely think this is like a step up from the guys below him. I don't think he's that far off from, you know, like Tucker and Acuna, but just like skill-wise, obviously Tucker and Acuna, you kind of rely on them more to play more, so you expect more from them. But I think with Springer, you kind of know what to expect.
All right. At number five, we have Houston Astros right fielder Kyle Tucker. This is where we kind of get into that elite player range. These are all very elite players. I think these are all kind of top 20, top 25 at worst players. Kyle Tucker is fantastic. The only reason he's not ahead of, you know, five is just because there are four like better players that are like, one would argue they're all kind of generational type talents. Like, not, you know, obviously the word generational kind of gets thrown around, but these are like the kind of upper echelon player talents, I would say, in the league. Tucker is fantastic, really good with the glove, really good with the bat, runs the base as well. Like, he's just a really good player all around. I mean, I feel like there's not too much to say. He's not a boring player. He's just not like a, like, there's nothing you can point out and be like, he does this really, really elitely, if that makes sense, if elite is a word, in an elite way. He's just a really well above average hitter. I would say maybe you could argue he's an elite hitter, but he's not like, you know, top tier hitter. Same with defense. Again, he's good out there. Not much else to say about him. Again, really good player. Ryan, what do you got on Tucker for 2023?
Yeah, so, you know, Kyle Tucker, I think, is where you start to enter a different tier of right fielders. As you mentioned, though, the guys ahead of him are just kind of those, you know, once, you know, you see these once-in-a-lifetime type talents, or once-in-a-generation, excuse me, lifetime's a little bit of an exaggeration. But Kyle Tucker is a consistent all-star. Kyle Tucker is, you know, coming off a quote-unquote down year at the plate relative to his 2021 with a 129 WRC+. Plus. But number one, a career-high in BSR. He was far more aggressive on the base path this year. He had attempted 29 steals, converted 25 of those. If that trend continues to go upwards with the bigger bases, we could be looking at a guy who, you know, I know this doesn't matter as much in terms of, you know, like it relevant analytical data, but being a 30-30 guy is still, in my opinion, a really cool feat to accomplish. And I think that, you know, he's able to do that. As you mentioned, he's a really good defender in the corner outfield, such a good defender in the corner outfield that he had positive defensive value despite playing a position that's largely considered not valuable. He doesn't strike out a lot. He has great contact skills. He doesn't chase very often, and he's got a great power, quite frankly. As you mentioned, not elite, but really good power. We're looking at a guy who's just a just a very strong all-around player.
And James.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, Ryan. I think we look at Tucker, right, as a guy who's not elite really at anything, but is just so good at everything that he kind of, you know, accumulates value. Like really not a lot of other players in the league are putting up, you know, back-to-back 4.5 win seasons. You know, he's only 26. He's projected 5.6 F4 by Steamer. That's really high. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he did it. A 151 WRC plus is his projection. He's never done that before, but a little bit, I guess, a relative down year last year with the bat compared to the year before that. I think when we look at Tucker, we kind of know he's going to walk a lot. He's not going to strike out a lot. He'll have, you know, an on-base percentage like 340, 350, and a slugging percentage above 500. So, you know, he's gonna have that like 870, 860 OPS and 150 WRC plus is, you know, his projection. I would probably go like 140. But if he plays 150 games again, then he'll probably walk into a 4.5-1 season.
All right. At number four, we have Atlanta Braves right fielder Ronald Acuña Jr. This is a guy that people had the consensus top five player a few years ago, a couple years ago, rather. Torn ACL, obviously, had a down year last year. I think we're probably going to see something closer to that regular Acuña we have this year. Coming off that second year removed from ACL injury, usually people are kind of better. They trust it more. Obviously, Acuña relies on athleticism in right field. Defensively, he's not bad. He, at the plate, he's obviously one of the better hitters in the league when he's on. One of the better base runners in the league when he's on. Again, all about that health, all about that ACL. So, again, I could see Acuna being a solid player like he was last year, but that 90th percentile outcome is an MVP player. So, you got to hope for that. And I'm kind of hoping, at least the way I have him right here, probably gonna hit that 70th percentile, at least relatively speaking. Like, you know, again, last year was tough for him, but again, this year probably gonna be better. But we'll see. I think Acuña is probably one of the more interesting players to watch of the season, just because, you know, the kind of range of outcomes. Ryan, what do you have for Acuña for 2023?
Yeah, so Ronald Acuña Jr. is someone that, as you mentioned, you know, stock kind of fell a little bit just because of a down year. You know, we're looking at a player who, you know, I know is coming off an ACL injury, but still, you know, he really pushed his knee last year because he attempted 40 stolen bases. You know, I don't think we're going to see a Ronald Acuña Jr. that decides he doesn't want to run or be a dynamic player anymore. Now, his days as a center fielder are probably, you know, gone. I mean, not only is Michael Harris found, but as you mentioned, you know, you want to preserve his health. You know, I think he's someone who can see kind of a return to career norms and defensive value. Obviously, you want him to elevate the ball more. He struggled with that last year. I don't think that's something that's too much to ask of him in terms of fixing things. His max exit velocity, his hard hit rates, they weren't too far off from what they were in years past. I think it's just a matter of finding some sort of consistency once again with the bat. This is a dynamic talent. This is an elite talent. And I would not start selling stock on him just yet.
And James.
Yeah, I mean, I think Acuña, I think a lot of people are too low on him coming into this year. Like you said, the 90th percentile outcome is an MVP candidate. I mean, I feel like you could make an argument here that like the 70th percentile outcome is an MVP candidate. He's never had like an MVP caliber season, so I mean, maybe we're jumping the gun a little bit, but then again, like he's a 25-year-old, and I know he's coming off a torn ACL, but it didn't seem to like. You know, I don't think the reason why his bat wasn't as good last year is because of his ACL, right? He still was an elite base runner. The defense was really bad. I mean, maybe the second year you'd assume a little bit better, but even if it's not, Acuña's value with his glove and his leg, his not his glove, his bat and his legs will make up for any glove issues that, you know, prevail.
All right, number three, we have Mookie Betts of the Los Angeles Dodgers. Again, Mookie Betts is a generational player. He's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer easily, probably unanimous, hopefully. Definitely deserves to be. He's at three. Why? Because the two players ahead of him, one is probably the best hitting talent we've seen in quite a while, and the second is a guy who just put up 11 wins. So it's really tough. Again, Betts anywhere from 15 to, I would say, seven in terms of players in the league. Definitely top three right fielder. He's a really good player. I mean, there's really nothing like he does everything well, runs the bases really well, plays really good defense, elite offensive player, you know, in terms of his base running plus his hitting ability. He comes in number three for me as well. Ryan, what do you got on Betts for 2023?
Yeah, so Mookie Betts, just a guy who's elite at defense, elite at base running, and an elite hitter. We're entering that tier of guys who are, you know, there are no question marks. There are no, well, if this happens, well, if that happens, there is. These guys are in, you know, when you're looking at, you know, betting odds, when you're looking at, you know, people picking MVP guys, you know, or these are the guys we're talking about. These are the guys that are heavily involved in that discussion. And Mookie Betts being, you know, not being the best right fielder in baseball isn't a knock on his talent, right? It's not at all a knock on his talent. This position just gets super loaded at the top. Betts is a guy who's going to be an inner circle Hall of Famer. You know, he's one of the greatest players I'll ever get to watch. And, you know, it's crazy that that he's in his 30s and he's still, you know, a generational talent.
And James.
I think 7th or 15 is crazy. Just gonna put that out there. 15. If you rank Mookie Betts at 15, the best players in baseball. I don't know what you're doing. But I had bets above Soto here. I have him at number two. But yeah, like Betts had a, I think, underrated year last year. I don't know if you can say that, but he had a 6.6 WAR season, 144 WRC plus, great, you know, elite glove, right? And elite speed. So I don't know. I think when you look at Betts, you expect six wins, and if you get eight or nine, it wouldn't be surprising at all.
All right, let's move on to number two. We have Juan Soto. Now, the San Diego Padres got traded at the deadline, obviously, last year, one of the bigger trades we've seen recently. Soto, generational hitting talent. The defense is suspect, right? The defense was not good last year. It was really good the year before, not good last year. But again, he's a generational hitting talent, so he kind of with it. That's why I have him at two personally. I have him above Trout personally. I'm really high in Soto. I think it's very clear that last year was probably a 10th percentile outcome for him. And that's like not a terrible season. Like, he's going to probably be one of the front runners for MVP. He's just that good of a player. And I'm banking on his upside of being that good of a player. Ryan, where do you have Soto coming into the year, and what do you send him now?
Yeah. So I infamously had Juan Soto ahead of Mike Trout and everyone else as the best player in baseball coming into last year. And that's not what happened, right? You know, am I sitting here and saying that Juan Soto is not the player he was last year, or that he's not a good player anymore, or anything like that? Absolutely not. But you know, I think I'm going to take it a step back for a little bit until I see defensive consistency, because that does affect your WAR ceiling. That's what it did for him last year. And I'm going to say that he is an elite, you know, generational talent. But I don't think he's the best player in baseball. I had him second on my right field list. Do I think that he is, like, do I think I could be, you know, trying to be careful now with Soto? Sure. I totally see him winning the NL MVP because he's just that good. But I just do see, it's just like we're in that tier where everyone is so damn good that even a slight knock to your game could cost you a spot on the list.
And James.
I mean, what is there to say about Soto? I think if we're ranking the best hitters in baseball just with the bat, Soto's number one. I think he's the best hitter in baseball. The defense is really concerning. Like, we've seen, you know, it was only an 18 WRC plus drop, which I say only 18, but like when you're up at like 160, that's a huge difference. But you know, 160 to 145, whatever, he underperformed his xWOBA by 25 points. I would definitely assume, like, This is like the worst season of Soto's career, right? And I think there's a really good chance that it's the worst season we see from him in 10 years. But 2 years ago, he had a 7 WAR. Last year, 3.8. He's projected 7.2 by Steamer. He's projected. And projections are normally very conservative, at 173 to WRC plus by Steamer, and like 168 by depth charts. And so like, yeah, the general consensus here is that this guy is a true talent, 170 WRC plus hitter, which is ridiculous. I mean, like, there's not really much else to say. I think when you look at Soto next year, again, like, it's not like Betts. And the difference for me between Soto and Betts, and why I put Betts above Soto, is that I think the floor is so much higher with Betts, because you know that if he plays 150 games, he'll give you, you know, 5.5, 6 wins. Soto played 150 games last year, but his glove was so bad that it held him back. Like a negative 17 defensive value is just awful. Like there's really no beating around the bush there. It's just bad. But like even a negative 10 or a negative 8, like, and you're looking at probably an easy 5-6 win season when his bat was the worst of his career. So I think when you look at Soto going into next year, it's hard not to like bet to expect a 6 win season.
All right, and coming out of number one, we have New York Yankees right fielder Aaron Judge. Judge, you know, what are you going to say about him? Best power in the league, probably. Really solid defense out there on right field. Runs the bases at a fine rate. Last year, coming off an 11.8 win season, I believe, off the top of my head. He's that good of a player, obviously. Probably the best season since Bonds. Definitely the best season since Bonds last year. I would say excluding Ohtani. You could also argue that it's better than Ohtani. But yeah, I mean, look, Judge, to me, the second best player in baseball behind Ohtani. Again, nobody's close to Ohtani, but that season last year, definitely deserving MVP. If he comes in at number one, I could see him anywhere from one to, honestly, one or two, I would say. I'll take Judge, but you could have him one or two. I wouldn't be that upset. Ryan, what do you got on Judge? Try to keep this under 10 minutes.
Aaron Judge is elite. I love Aaron Judge. I'm a Yankees fan. I'm biased. I'm putting him one. I don't care about the numbers. Everyone can, you know, you can say, you had Juan Soto's the best player in baseball last year. Why is he not the best right fielder? Because I said so. Aaron Judge is, we've never seen a season like that. And quite frankly, I think if you have a season like that, I'm going to throw away projections for just a second and at least crown you as the best right fielder on my list for at least 1 year. You deserve it. I think Judge is, also just doesn't get enough credit for being, he's a generational talent. Like, no one in the Statcast era barrels the ball more than him, hits the ball harder than him. You know, all those things, though, that's generational power right there. I don't think, and I think there's a higher ceiling because he might be playing a lot of center field at Harrison Bader out, so that's going to help his war for sure.
And James.
You guys just love the word generational, huh? I'm looking at 6 generational talents in the same year.
All 10 right fielders here are generational guys.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with
and that. MVP winners.
But, like, you guys throw the word generational around a lot, but Judge is definitely a guy who is. Like, I think we're looking at, I don't know about, like, 6, but I think we're looking at 3, maybe 4. Because those guys are, like if we're looking normally, right, Betts was the best right fielder of the 2010s, right? And then I think between Soto and Acuna, one of them will be the best right fielder of the 2020s. But with Judge, like we were talking about, he had a 200 WRC plus. That doesn't happen, right? We haven't seen that since, 2004, Barry Bonds, when he was, cheating. So, I mean, I don't know. I think Judge, the projection is 164 for Seamer, 171 for Zips, 8 war projection. Like, I mean, I think I'm putting him at 1 because of what he did last year, not fully because I think he's actually going to be better than Soto and Betts this year. I don't know if he will, obviously, but I think with Judge, there's some, you know, caution, but at the same time, like, he had an 11 win season last year. There's really no argument against it.
All right. That's it for this episode of the Deep Red and Left Field podcast. If you like what you saw, please give us a 5-star rating on whatever platform you're listening to. Make sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Deep Red Pod. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at LW Nerds. Follow James on Twitter at James Valentinas. And follow Ryan on Twitter at Ryan Garcia ESM. It's been a Deep Drive in the Left Field by Castellanos, and we will see you in episode number 86.